When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon to each and every one of our merry Marvelites. We're very excited to be back here on Geekscape, bringing you the Marvel movie talk that you crave and you call for. I am Christian Blatt. Over there is Eric Connor. How are you today, Count Eric Connor?
I am good. It is a windy day in Southern California.
Boy, is it ever.
My hair was perfect. And then...
Oh, yeah.
I
saw you drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's. Your hair was perfect.
My bouffant was bouffanting then now.
It was bouffanting. I believe the internet has, that the wind has blown over the internet cable for our friend Katie Hampton, who we hope can join us today. But she was having some tech issues. But that's all right. We'll be fine. We love Katie. We'll see her soon, and we'll let you guys know about some of the stuff that's coming up soon. But I want to start with Hollywood's biggest night. The Academy Awards were this past Sunday. And for Marvel fans, it was very exciting. Tony Stark won his first award. The Best Actor category had The Watcher going up against The Rhino. Paul Giamatti. But yeah, ultimately they lost to the Scarecrow, which doesn't seem fair, you know.
If you watch The Rhino again, it might be actually somewhat fair. As much as I love Paul Giamatti.
Yes, I do love Paul Giamatti. And I did enjoy that film, The Holdovers, but, you know, I understand. Look, only one can win. That's the way that all of this stuff works. But I do... Actually, for our enjoyment, Eric, I have a clip from the Oscars because one of our favorite movies didn't get name checked. Actually, it got name checked in the monologue, but it got dialogue checked by the great John Mulaney, and I want to share that with our audience right now. So
we wouldn't have been able to hear such classic lines as "You're going to need a bigger boat. I'll have what she's having." And he was in the Amazon with my mother when she was researching spiders just before she died.
That's right.
That's my Madam Web shooter.
Also, Sydney Sweeney hosted SNL a couple weeks ago, and in her monologue, she said, "Maybe you know me from Euphoria. Maybe you know me from," I forget what her romantic comedy was. And she's like, "But you definitely don't know me from Madam Web." So I thought that was nice. I appreciated that. And our buddy Daniel Drew in the chat, he did indeed notice that. So we've got a smattering of news, as they say. But here at the top of the show, I want to let people know that we are going to be covering X-Men 97 as it's released, but we don't have our schedule figured out exactly for when we'll be doing this show, mostly because when it premieres, my kids have the audacity to be on spring break and they want to go somewhere and do something fun. You know what's fun when I was a kid? Watching X-Men on TV. But so
Price is Right. Price is Right, dude.
Yeah.
Price is Right, 11 a.m. That was a sign of you were sick. But not so sick that you couldn't make your way to the TV.
Do you know how much it personally shook me to move to Los Angeles and find out that The Price is Right is on at 10 a.m. here? Because I used to roll right into lunchtime after on a sick day or whatever. And Kemi Egan's absolutely right. How dare they want to do that? But in any case... I know these are great questions. So we are going to be covering that show, and I believe our friends David Brody and Katie Hampton will join us. And speaking of Mr. Brody, look at this. Here he is right now.
Hello, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
That's all right. All you missed was John Mulaney reciting a line from Madam Web. That's really the only thing that's happened thus far. So,
the one line that Edward is in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that we're hearing you on your computer microphone, not your fancy microphone in front of you. Yeah. StreamYard gets a little tricky like that.
Fix it right now.
All right. Well, where we're going to start is the newsiest of all the news, which was the announcement for Venom 3. Remember, we don't just talk about the MCU here. We have to talk. Hey, Daniel, what do they call the Sony universe? I feel like it's like Spumco, the fake company name from Ren and Stimpy. I know it's close to that.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I hope Daniel knows in the chat, but
it's the Spider-Verse, isn't it? Isn't that what they?
No, because that's specifically those animated films. The SSU. Yeah, that doesn't sound as bad as I thought it did, is what Daniel's saying. But Variety, with all their pop-up ads, pointed out that Venom 3 is going to be titled Venom: The Last Dance. Yeah. And
Jordan's going to be up, I think.
If it's called The Last Dance and we get a meme of Eddie Brock looking to the camera and be like, and I took that personally, I think it's going to be worth it. It's going to completely be worth it.
Unless he breaks into the Donna Summer song, either one.
That's going to happen at some point though. And I had that on my, like, do not play at my wedding list. and I'm already dreading that moment, David. I don't know what I'll do.
I just had no Coldplay on my list. That I figured everything else was fair game, but you know, man's got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. So we have this title, Last Dance, and yes, absolutely, we're gonna get that song, and it'll be a whole dance number. So the third installment of the Venom franchise has its title, Venom: The Last Dance. Last Dance might as well be The Last Dance. So the release date's moved up to October 25th, which was from November 8th. So it's only moved back a little bit, and we don't know a lot about it, but it will have Juno Temple, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Clark Bacco. I have no idea who Clark is, but it's a feature directorial debut for Kelly Marcel. Don't know much about that either, but Juno Temple from Ted Lasso, and also Fargo. Sorry, it took me a second. We're not firing on all cylinders here today. And now Cammy Egan basically has just given us the plot for the movie. Venom goes to a karaoke bar to sing Last Dance. I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, you know, I feel like the movie is shot, it's edited, and they're like, oh, yeah, this is the sequence. By the way, Cammy Egan, this is very rude that you think that the Sony-verse should be called the shit-verse. but to be fair, the majority of those films would definitely, match up with that moniker. So the first two Venom films combined to earn $1.3 billion at the box office. And then that makes me wonder, did the first one make $1 billion? And then the second one made the 0.3, the 300,000. I find it surprising that they made that much. I liked the first Venom. I thought it was fun, completely imperfect, but I liked the dynamic. I think Tom Hardy's great. But the second one, it left something to be desired, let's just say. At a certain point, I just had to throw my hands up. But I'll ask each of you, but I'll ask you first. Eric, what did you think of the two Venom films we've gotten thus far?
Very little, very little. They left almost no impression on me. Except maybe the moments in the bodega. That was kind of fun.
Those are pretty good. Yeah.
But the rest of it, I found the action to be kind of subpar. I mean, the acting's fine. Tom Hardy is always going for something, and I respect that in a performer. But I'm not exactly sure what borough that dude was playing. Considering, like, it's not set in New York, right?
They're in San Francisco.
Yeah, and so his accent is like, okay, I don't understand. I just find Venom is
he relocated directly from the set of Welcome Back, Kotter. I believe that's his accent. So
now the sweat hog verse I could get behind very much, but it's a shame because Venom is such a great character in the comic. It was always cool. I remember the birth of Venom, from our, my old buddy here, Black Spider-Man.
Secret Wars number eight. Absolutely. Yeah.
It was 30 copies of it. I needed it was to so go up cool. in value.
And then, in Carnage as well, which, Woody Harrelson, great actor, but somehow this is so much less than the sum of its parts. And I've got absolutely no excitement whatsoever for Venom 3. And I'm stunned, like yourself, Christian, how much money these movies made internationally. But the Fast and the Furious franchise also makes billions of dollars worldwide. So I don't know what happens in the translation.
That's a great point. I'm trying to not trigger our friend Daniel. I know how his fury about Venom 2, but what did you think, Mr. Brody, of the two Venom films?
Well, from what I remember, I preferred 1 to 2, but I couldn't tell you what 1 was about. Like, you'd have to remind me. I remember I enjoyed it like a 6.5, 7, maybe. I was happy that whatever that verse is called, the universe, that they put out a decent film. I thought 2 was, it was lacking in plot. I thought the special effects looked cheesy at times. The bonus scene, which is the movie where you see him at the bar, which Marvel movie was that? Was that Far
that
From
was,
Home? Close to Home.
No Way Home.
No Way, yeah. Homelander. I don't know if that's going to pay off, in anything, if that's going to pay off in the third movie. That was just a thing. I love the character. Yeah. I think the character's great. I enjoyed, reading about it when it was just a costume, then it was a bad guy. And I hope this one's better. I don't know who's writing this one, but I think the name is appropriate. I can't imagine that there'll be a fourth. But, Sony only has so many characters. When you have to go to Madam Web level to make a movie, I think Venom may get a few more films out of them. So who knows?
Yeah. Your internet's a little staticky.
Crap. Brody. I thought maybe what
you're
I said was terrible.
In and out. So
let me
see. No. We got most of what you said. Maybe we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. Maybe we'll click off your camera and deprive the world of that face. But Eric, you really wanted to share the fact that this is not to be confused with a different film with a similar name, correct?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm kind of hoping it is based off this film, the lesser known Sharon Stone, Rob Marshall romp, Last Dance.
Is there nudity in that film that we're plugging for?
Rob Morrow. He did some Southern exposure. I'll see myself out.
By the way, you didn't shout out that Dennis Quaid. Randy Quaid. No. Randy Quaid. You have to make that distinction. Dennis Miller's not in that movie.
Oh, sorry.
He's in The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, but he's not in that movie.
He's also in he's in The Net. He was great in The Net, but we'll talk about that in another episode. I want to focus only on The Net in one episode.
Yeah, we'll do a whole Net episode. Yeah. So, you guys let me know if you're hearing me okay, or because I'm like, is my internet bad? Is it you guys? Is it everybody? Is the world's internet bad? We'll press on. We're having fun.
It's Cammy Egan's fault.
Yeah, I think that the chat would agree that the fact that it's got the word last in the title is good. Someone working on the movie said Venom 3 will be connected to that end credit scene from No Way Home. Someone at Sony possibly said it. I do believe I read that. Kemi Egan says, I didn't care for the Venom movies. I thought the stories were bad, but the effects were decent. Yeah. What I kind of remember is that Bane is dating Jen Lindley from Dawson's Creek. And somehow meets like a sticky pile of tar. There's a lot more that happens, but pretty sure that's the summary of the film that people are expecting from this show. And don't sleep on the fact that this is not our next movie from the SSU, I believe is what Daniel told me. you know, we are getting our Kraven the Hunter movie before this, a full 2 months before. It'll be out at the end of August. So we're going to have a lot of time to plan more movie outings, Eric, you and I. Like, we had almost the whole theater to ourselves to see Madam Web. We'll get, I think a lot of people are going to show up for Kraven. but oh, yeah. I believe that Kraven was done, ready to come out in the fall, and then they just moved it a year. I don't believe
it. Then they watched it.
Yeah.
Well, they released Madam Web so that, you know, in comparison, it would look fantastic.
You know what? I mean, on this very show, I had to say that it did give me a new appreciation for Morbius.
Yeah.
You know,
critics and Kemi Egan were just full teasing star you, more than you know, Madam Web.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think that's a brilliant idea for a release pattern is you release just a terrible movie so that then everyone feels better about your next movie.
Well, it wasn't great, but it was no Madam Web. So I enjoyed it. You know,
it's great psychology. Yeah.
So August 30th is the date that we should all have circled on our calendar for our big release date for Kraven. Set your alert for your favorite theater chain or local theater for when tickets go on sale. I want AMC to let me know on the app when it's happening. Nice. And Daniel's explaining that SSU stands for Sony's Spider-Manless Universe. I think that's an accurate descriptor. And unfortunately, it is true. There is no Spider-Man and no hope of Spider-Man happening in really any of these things. So
yeah, but Eric, Eric's the expert. Will there be Kraven sauce? That's what I need to know at McDonald's.
Oh,
listen, if there's not, we're going to make it and we will ship it out of Christian's new house in Burbank. It'll be our version of moonshine.
Hey, don't dox my kids. He's doxing my kids.
I heard it. But people are going to be going house to house in Burbank now looking for your kids.
Looking for Kraven sauce.
Kraven sauce. I'm craving.
So, Kemi Egan makes the point. I'm waiting for Madam Web to be on MST3K. There's an iteration of Mystery Science Theater 3000 called Riff Tracks. It's the sort of the second generation of the show, and they do more current movies. I would hope they start a Kickstarter that we get a Riff Tracks of Madam Web before next year. Yeah, I need it now.
Available free 24 hours a day on your Samsung Smart TV.
Oh my gosh. No, you're absolutely right. Well, and there's the Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel. Yeah.
One thing you brought up with Venom 3 that gives me, everything about the SSU or whatever gives me pause, but the idea that it is a first time director. That hasn't gone well with a lot of these superhero movies. That's a great point. I mean, look what happened with The Dark Phoenix, where it's an established writer who knows the genre, who's worked in Hollywood for years, you know. And again, a screenwriter who's been doing it for 10 plus years knows their way around a set, knows their way around a camera. But when you give them a movie of this magnitude as their first time out, that's a lot. I mean, you can go from maybe a small indie film to a big Marvel movie and do well. But first time out of the gate, a little nervous. I mean, I know she wrote Saving Mr. Banks, which obviously is a very good indicator of success in the Venom franchise. But I'm a little concerned. I wish her well. I want more female directors behind the cameras. And
comparing to other movies, she's got to be better than first time director, the woman that did Wonder Woman 1984. That was
Patty Jenkins. Wasn't that Patty Jenkins?
And you would know it.
Didn't she direct Wonder Woman 1?
Yeah, no, she directed other things, but I think she
didn't
forgot.
Do the first Wonder Woman. I don't think. No,
you it was the same director.
You wouldn't know it. Oh. You're right.
Oh no, but yeah. To your point, you
would think that they just brought someone off the street.
Wonder Woman.
You're saving Mr. Banks' connection.
A train wreck. It was a date rape movie. Sorry.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, at least she took him out. Tammy Egan says that Mary Poppins is the special cameo in The Last Dance. I kind of like the idea of Venom showing up at a doorstep and trying to help raise two precocious British children and turn them into proper young adults. I think Venom Poppins would actually be fantastic.
If he doesn't eat the penguin.
Excited for that.
Right. I thought we had three children. Okay.
Yeah, that's a problem. No, that doesn't ring a bell. Oh, my goodness. Well, so we have that coming up. We've got Kraven coming up. There's so much to be excited about. But we are here to be a little bit of the bearers of bad news because according to an article from Forbes, which again is another one of these sites that has a lot of like auto playing ads and stuff. So, you know, we'll get through it. But according to Forbes, there'll be no Eternals 2, Captain Marvel 3, Ant-Man 4 as Disney gets risk averse. Before I dive into the article, that headline does seem to be following some logic. None of those three films were particularly successful. I would think that Ant-Man could be the one that maybe you'd argue for giving another one, but it also, it's like most of these movies don't get a fourth. Thor did, but you know, usually it's three and out. And you know, as we've talked about the Marvels, I enjoyed it. I watched it again about a month ago. I enjoyed it again, but it was not a success is a minor way to say it. So the idea of getting risk averse before we dive into this Forbes article, it seems like it's just common sense. What do you think, Mr. Brody?
Well, I'm looking at those three franchises. And like you said, I could tolerate another Ant-Man movie if it was written well, if it captured the fun of the first two movies. Captain Marvel was 0-for-2 for me as far as they weren't on the level. They were fine. They weren't on the level.
Sure.
Right? Eternals was a train wreck, in my opinion. Plot holes galore, my favorite stripper. I felt like they should have taken Eternals and made it an Elseworld. Like, agreed that it happened in another universe, and they wouldn't have to explain why there's a giant, you know, what do you call those? The Celestials in the ocean.
The Celestials.
Nobody's addressed. You wouldn't have to explain why there's an international crisis in London and no American superheroes show up. They don't reference any.
Yeah.
You know, it was a standalone film. They should have just said, you know what, it's Elseworld and it, nothing counts. Nothing matters. Especially now that they're not doing a sequel. They're not going to conclude that plot. Now they have to deal with the Celestial in the ocean in some other movie, you know, which makes no sense. So that, I'm thrilled about that. The other two, I'm like, it's fine. I get it. I'm thrilled there's no Eternals 2. Because then we'd have to review it, which means I'd have to watch it. So
you wouldn't have to. We don't make anyone watch these things.
No, we'd make them.
We would appreciate it. Okay,
you and I would do a special trip to New York.
don't hide the fact you send nasty emails out for our viewers. Eric knows.
That's true. They're slightly bullying.
Yeah, one of my children is just off camera, tied up to a small bomb. So you know, I do this under duress.
What do you think, Eric, about the no Eternals 2, no Captain Marvel 3, no Ant-Man 4?
Bob Iger comes back into the picture and he has to clean up a mess. And so the simplest way to clean up a mess is you go after the biggest things that cause the mess. Eternals didn't play. Captain Marvel, obviously the Marvels just was bombed at the box office. And then Ant-Man 3 was like that tipping point where everything started to seemingly go downhill in a lot of people's opinions. So it's not surprising, right? It's in essence Bob Iger saying, there's more gold elsewhere in the MCU. Let's just go there. Let's be smarter. Let's be safer. And there is elements of all of these movies that I do. I mean, the good news with the MCU is like, Ant-Man 4 might not happen, but Ant-Man's still there. And think of great he was in Endgame, you know? So like, they can plug and play that character in, Civil War, same thing. Like, so I think on that end, it sort of minimizes the damage of this kind of announcement, but it's not shocking. I actually side a bit more with Christian on this one. I actually enjoyed Eternals. I hope Chloe Zhao gets a chance to direct another epic something, because I think she's got such a unique sort of approach to this thing. It's the only It's the only Marvel movie that's going to use Pink Floyd, and it used it perfectly. So I do hope they give her another chance in this, but yeah, this there's no news to this news, unfortunately. And they just have, as we mentioned, all these dangling threads from these films that they're at some point going to have to get to, or they're just going to forever ignore.
Or, can we do away with the Wasp now?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. She didn't actually get canceled, but yeah, I know. She and Shuri were both, Letitia Wright. They were both making headlines right before the release of their respective films that I think Disney didn't appreciate.
Yeah.
I still think, according to Daniel Drew, I still think Eternals should have been two movies a couple months apart. It was too much for one movie. They could have given us time with the characters. If you saw the recent episode of the show where I spoke with Chris Claremont for, 2 hours and 24 minutes, we touched on Eternals briefly, and it was just, you might think that interview was too long, but Eternals was longer. So they'll tell you everything you need to know. They tried to fit way too many characters into it, and it made it so we didn't care about any one of them, but yeah, I guess the understanding is that at some point we're going to see this white version of the Vision, Eric, which you could have just said that. You texted me. I thought something was wrong.
No, I sent you the picture.
I didn't see there was a picture.
I sent him a tasteful of David.
So do we think Vision Quest is still coming out, or do we feel like Vision Quest is on the chopping block?
That seems to be, think.
They haven't said that it isn't, and it seems to be like it's just they're not in a rush. I want to bring up a comment from, I always want comment from Kim Egan. I would like to see more Kamala Khan. I think she works best as a TV series. We will see what happens. But this is the comment I wanted to bring up. Key Files. I like both Eternals and the Marvels. I think they're falling to all these crybabies, whining about woke, which is absurd. Look, I think that you can certainly say that has something to do with Disney's reactions, but those films didn't do well, not because of, any kind of agenda or anything like that. I mean, there is a very loud minority who will, carry on about things like that. I can think back to a time where there was the Battlestar Galactica reboot and people couldn't understand that Starbuck was a woman. And I honestly thought Dirk Benedict could still play the character, but let's not go down that rabbit hole tonight. But I think that just those movies just didn't connect with audiences. We're talking about Eternals, Captain Marvel, and Ant-Man, but let's not forget, of course, that Guardians 3 was a tremendous success between Ant-Man and Captain Marvel. So,
But they were woke. They had to get a raccoon in the movie just to satisfy the raccoon audience.
Well, and other animals. It wasn't
They like to be known as raccoon Americans, but I know exactly
however they identify.
Key Files makes a phenomenal point here, though, about it makes me wonder what kind of power Feige is being stripped of that these things aren't happening. And I think that Eric touched on it. This is an Iger versus Chapek. Chapek was like, whatever you want to do, everything's working. Everything's coming up Milhouse. So go ahead and just leave it there. And Iger's like, look at all these movies that didn't make money. Why would we make another one of those? So I think that there's definitely some tightening of the reins at this point. And, we've had a number of the television series cancel. Cam Egan just says, I could definitely do without Captain Marvel 3, but would like Eternals 2 and Ant-Man 4 if the storylines are better. To Eric's point, we're going to see Scott Lang again. Carol Danvers will be around. We're going to see Monica Rambeau. She doesn't get stuck in the X mansion and then not pull on that thread. I think that all of those things are considerations for storylines that will be revisited. I mean, they didn't drop this character on us only to never actually do anything with it, giving us Binary, So I think that, I think that they're just being a little bit more cautious. Risk averse is definitely a very lawyerly speak for it, but I think it's good. But I like some of these interactions with some of these characters. So so Eternals 2 no longer in development, even. And these other ones is basically all what the headline said, but these are more words that say it. So it gives us these stats, which I don't lean on the tomato meter, not just because it has such a stupid name, but it's relevant. So Eternals had a 47% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's interesting, though, because you hear $402 million. You're like, well, that should count for something, shouldn't it? No, it doesn't. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, 46%, $476 million. All right, I would have thought that was a success. The Marvels with $206 million. The later one of these films, which, like the Eternals, you can chalk it up to being released. I think that was in late 2022. The movies weren't the movies yet, you know. Nicole Kidman tried to get us back in. Not everybody was going. I think by the time that The Marvels was out last November, most people were willing to go to see a first run movie in the theater, and they showed up for Guardians of the Galaxy. So, Eternals box office, you're like, okay, maybe a year later or 3 years earlier would have been different. But look, I think that these numbers tell the tale that we need. Is like, yeah, these logically are not movies that would get more stories, you know? And let's not forget that Forbes mentions the $200 million Secret Invasion was probably the TV show alarm. The Marvels was kind of the red flag for the movies, but Eric, we spend so much time trying to forget about Secret Invasion, don't we?
But we can't, right? I mean, that's the thing.
No,
you might be done with the past, still but the past ain't done with you. No, that thing haunts me.
I have an idea for that.
Please do.
Okay, tell us.
You make it an alternate universe, and then it gets destroyed in an incursion, and then it never happened. We get Rhodey back.
I love it.
We don't have a super Skrull.
Yeah.
The whole thing was a train wreck. If they could undo it, make it not happen.
It's so weird because I can't figure out, you know, obviously they're shapeshifters, but I can't figure out, does the super Skrull look like Bob Marley or does he look like Ken? I can't really quite figure out who he looks like. He's a very familiar face, but he is the super Skrull. The Forbes article goes on to say it's also important to consider the era Marvel's moving into. So they have to kick off several extremely important properties. Again, this is from the Forbes article. Fantastic Four, the X-Men. We're going to get more Spidey. We've got this Captain America New World Order. Doesn't sound right. Brave New World, I believe. The Captain America NWO crossover will just have to live on in Eric Connor's head. I'm sorry. So it's they're at a point, thanks to this Fox deal, that they have much bigger fish to fry. They're like, Do you really want another Eternals movie, or do you want us to try to make a good Fantastic Four movie? Which I have something to say about the Fantastic Four towards the end of the show that I think it'll be a programming note that I think people will be excited about. But is it that simple, Eric, that it's just like, we're not going to talk about the old shit because look at the new shit that we got coming. I believe that it's the Men in Black description of, do you want this old and busted joint or do you want the new hotness? I think we want the new hotness. Eric, every time you sign up for the new hotness, don't you?
Every morning I wake up, I look in the mirror, I'm looking at the new hotness. Yeah, and I think those are guarantees. That's the stuff Bob Iger's salivating over. And it's the stuff that his shareholders need. It's when you brought up the Marvels box office, $200 million worldwide. That is half of what Captain Marvel made in America alone. That is such a staggering drop. Like, I was wondering if you guys could think of any sequel that made beyond maybe, I don't know, Smokey and the Bandit 3, but any sequel that made so much less money than its predecessor on that order.
You trumped my Caddyshack 2. And you raised Caddyshack 2 with Smokey and the Bandit 3. And there's also Next Karate Kid. And you're making a great point about Venom, because I really did think that I was sort of joking. And the more I thought about it, it's like, didn't the first Venom make $1 billion? So then Venom 2 makes 300,000. They're like, well, we're doing a third one, I guess.
How did Grease 2 do?
Perfectly. You saw it.
Yeah. I mean, we're gonna score the magic's on the screen, Brody. What are you?
I meant in the box office. On the
you know what, though? That might be. Now, see, I'm going to do my homework after this. I think that might be it, actually. I think you found the big winner on the box office drop.
If you want to Google the box office drops between Grease and Grease 2, I'll leave that to either of you while I read this comment from Key Files, who I appreciate being here today and being involved in the conversation. So what are safe products? If they introed a lot of possible characters, what's the direction now? What does this mean for X-Men? I mean, I am sure there is a plan to tell these stories and tell these stories right. Let's remember that the first two X-Men movies were, you know, most of them were well received financially. The first two were actually very good movies, I thought. The first one I wish they'd spent a little bit more money on. But the second one is still one of my favorite superhero movies of all time, X2. Do you have some stats for us? Scoop? Yes. We should give you a little reporter hat that says scoop.
Let me get my scoop glasses on. Ta-dun! Okay, so...
Extra.
Grease, with a budget of $6 million, that's important, $6 million, made $366 million. Grease
that's
2...
That's like 1978 dollars, right?
Yes. Grease 2, wow. With a budget of $11.2 million, with no John Travolta, no Olivia Newton-John. Does anyone want to guess? 366 versus what? What did they make? What did Grease 2 make at the box office? Lower.
I'm going to say less than the Marvels.
Yes, you are correct.
So, okay. 80.
I think it might be less than the Captain America that went straight to video.
I would say less than most baseball contracts. Keep going. Annual.
$32 million.
$15.2 million for a difference of
15.
Yep, $351 million difference between the first and the second.
That's even less than the Oakland Athletics payroll.
That's
$15 million.
$15.2 million box office. They made a profit of $4 million at the box office.
Well, and the Grease figures are a touch inflated because it's re-releases and whatnot. But the truth is, the initial release of that movie in America alone was so much. Yeah, so I think a tenth of the amount of the predecessor alone is...
Wait, are you saying the $15.2 million for Grease 2 is inflated?
He's saying the $300 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Grease 2, by the way, it looks like it didn't even get released worldwide. So they're kind of like, let's just minimize the damage. Let's just keep it local.
All right. There may be worse comparisons, but I Grease 2...
No, but that, I think that might take it.
No. That,
very well
that,
played,
yeah,
sir.
And join us on our next episode where we compare the box office for Mannequin to Mannequin 2 on the Move. We're not going to do it now. That's next time on the show. Key File saying that I don't know if any of these films are guaranteed successes. Look, nothing's a guaranteed success, but if you're going to play the futures game, the odds are that a Fantastic Four movie and an X-Men movie from Marvel Studios will do better than an Eternals 2, an Ant-Man 4, a Captain Marvel 3, Venom 3, Madam Web 2, Book of Shadows. You know, I mean, none of these things I think are a lock, but I think that you're more likely to succeed there. And Kemi Egan, I will not have you disparaging the name of Big Top Pee Wee here, but you're right. It was not as successful. So go ahead.
To defend our gentleman's comments or gentle ladies.
Key files.
Yeah. I was actually just looking this up. Dark Phoenix only made like $250 million worldwide. And so, I can see what you're saying as far as like even an X-Men film does not necessarily guarantee box office success. But if you play the odds, a new X-Men franchise versus Eternals 2, I mean, it's Bob Iger has heard of the X-Men. Bob Iger never heard of Eternals, I don't think, until he saw the box office receipts.
Well, David, I know we have to let you go. So let everybody know where they can find more of you, including on our upcoming X-Men 97 reviews. Which we'll talk about in the future, but where else can they find you?
Yeah, I'll be on upcoming shows here. You can always find me at the Brooklyn Boys podcast, available on all platforms. We were added to Amazon Music. You can now find us on the Amazon Music app. So if you are loyal to that one, then that's it. And we have a second podcast now on the same channel. We have a spinoff, which is all the talkbacks, which are listener voicemails. You can hear the original podcast and then everybody's comments about that episode. We're recording a new Brooklyn Boys tonight. So thank you for letting me plug that. Thanks for having me. I'll see you guys soon.
Yeah, we'll definitely see you soon. Thank you, Mr. Brody. Yeah, that's right. The next time that I talk to Mr. Brody will be probably lamenting the Mets start to the season. But that's all right.
Oh, thank gotta you. Gotta go on that note.
Yeah. It's time
cut to
go.
Cut to Brody weeping alone in a shower right now.
It's like a dust cloud. Yeah. So they do seem to be cutting back on Disney Plus as part of this, obviously. She-Hulk does not appear to be getting a second season. Again, not really a surprise. Tatiana Maslany said they blew their budget on the pricey parentheses, but still bad looking effects. Again, this is all from Forbes. I appreciate them going so in depth. Loki, I think, is over. Oh, thank God there will not be a Secret Invasion 2. We know that Agatha will show up. We do have questions about whether or not we're going to get the White Vision storyline. And I'm going to put this up on the screen. And Eric, if you could read that comment while I scroll through something.
Sure. Don't you? The Key Files asks, don't you think these Sony films are hurting the overall MCU products? I'm not a huge fan of any of these Spider-Man films except for the animated Spider-Verse. Yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, it can't help when you have characters like Venom, even Kraven, that could be a terrific. I mean, we just reviewed Kraven's Last Hunt, which is a brilliant miniseries that would have been an incredible Spider-Man 4. And so, yeah, you run that risk of it's like trickle down economics in reverse, where am I allowed to say the S word? Rolls downhill. And so I think, like, yeah, you have, let's say, a bad Kraven film, but now you have Aaron Taylor Johnson as Kraven. Yeah. And I think he'll be good. Maybe he's a good actor, but if they set it up wrong and then all of a sudden that carries over to trying to use Kraven in other properties, you know, I think it totally is going to take a bite at the quality overall of the MCU, even if it's just sort of a corner of the MCU initially.
Right. No, exactly. And the Forbes article that we're finishing up on right here, it says that they're probably going to focus for a little while on more street level and cheaper content like Echo and the upcoming Daredevil revival for the TV. I think that's true. And I want to give credit to Paul Tassi, T-A-S-S-I. That is the author of this piece on Forbes. And I want to shout him out for being so in-depth on what's going on with Marvel. I was even going to plug his Twitter page, his X. Hello, X World, at Paul Tassi, T-A-S-S-I. So if you have any problems with anything you wrote, take it up with Paul Tassi. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me about it.
You just threw Paul Tassi under the bus. He only gave you content and you give him pain.
He gave us, you know, that segment took up more than half the show, and I thought it was going to be like 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you, I'll let you behind the scenes. I did not know that article was out there when we started talking about it, and it was posted. Because I only had an article that I didn't trust the source about Eternals 2. But I was going to talk about it anyway, and then we got that great article.
It was actually written by your son.
Well, Felix knows what's going on, but let's talk about some good for a moment. The simple fact is that just yesterday, last night at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood, they did indeed have a premiere for the first three episodes of X-Men 97, which, as I referenced, we'll be covering on this very show. I'm just not entirely sure when you'll be able to hear it. And it's a good time to mention that, you know, the show exists on YouTube for those of you who like to watch live and join us in the chat. It is also an audio podcast. So if you subscribe to the audio version, you don't have to worry about our, I believe the word is fakakta schedule. It's a little tough to follow, But they did have an X-Men 97 fan event at the El Capitan yesterday. And we're seeing some images from it that, you know, makes it seem like it's exciting. This is an exciting thing to get. We've talked a lot about this project in recent months here on the show, Eric, because this is the one that we're like, oh man, this one has to be good. You know, like I can't imagine them getting this wrong. You know, it seemed like a lot of people turned up for it. There was some fun. There's a lot of cosplay, as our visual audience can see. But where's your excitement level at for X-Men 97, Eric?
Now that I'm seeing a Colossus that probably could use a shot or two of Ozempic, I'm more excited than ever. And I say this as someone who would not fit any better in that costume. So I say it with peace and love.
Yeah, no.
So, peace and love.
Yeah, you have the Ozempic dip right next to the Loki sauce, as do I, by the way. We just dip it right in there.
Makes for a hell of a cocktail.
exactly.
I just hope they get it right. The fact that I'm sure you're going to cover the bit of news that happened with X-Men.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But, you know, that news
we'll start with a positive.
That news will impact season three. So the first two seasons are written. But yes, we'll talk about that in a moment. I want to focus on the good first, though.
Yeah. Well, the good is, because Christian and I are relatively close in age, but I am a couple of years older than him. And I know you might think, well, you seem so much younger and it's more spry and virile.
Yeah.
And it's all correct. That is a true assumptions to make. But when this came out, the original X-Men, I believe you were still in high school, but I was in college. And so it didn't really for college, except for, I don't know, when they'd put Simpsons on in like the main hall or whatever, like people didn't really watch TV all that much during college. You know, it was back in the day, pre-internet and whatnot. So I didn't really watch X-Men as it came out, but I did discover it.
Some of us, our freshman year of college, set our VCR for the 5 consecutive weekday afternoons when the Dark Phoenix saga aired on Fox Kids in the afternoon. I hoped my roommate just didn't know what I was recording. If he'd asked, I would have been like, porn. And he would have been like, all right, that's cool. But anyway, sorry, finish your thought. Yeah.
Please remind me off camera to story about videotaping that I think.
Oh, good.
Not for this audience. Cammy Egan, I think, would appreciate it, but no one else. but basically, what I did recently actually was because I thought we were going to talk a lot about this actually. So I just kind of put on a bunch of episodes while I was doing some other work. And, you know, it's some of the writing maybe doesn't age beautifully, but they understand what makes X-Men tick. You know, I realize as I'm watching it, you know, even simple things, Cyclops using his optic blast to cut off one of the Sentinel's heads, like that alone is cool. It's the stuff I liked in the comic book, and they really got it. Jubilee is a really great character that they sort of start with in the old show. And so I think it's just like the fun of the X-Men is all over the old cartoon, but also the drama of it is there, too. And so, this is the thing that I just hope I'm watching that first episode and it works because the look of it is great. I think it's smart doing a throwback. No one's going to confuse this with any other MCU properties floating around over the last few years. So I think it was a savvy move, but also creatively, it might give them some room to play in sort of the more comic booky side of things. So. No, I expect it to be good. I don't know if my boys will watch it with me, but that's okay. I don't need them. I don't need anyone.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I think my kids are actually a little young for it because they haven't seen the original one. And I think that there is this excitement level of getting to see this. And, you know, they've been hyping it for a while. Apparently, the reactions from people who were at the fan event is that these three episodes are great. You know, on our, I think it was our previous episode, we went through the episode titles, so we know some of the stories that they're going to cover. And, you know, I think that the original series, of course, catered more to children who were watching broadcast network television in the early 90s. This, I think, is going to be appropriate for children, but they're definitely making it for people like you and I. And David Brody, we had to let him go, but you know, he'll be back next time. He's actually never seen the original. So I was saying to him, I'm like, you know what? Don't try to binge like all five seasons of the original. Just see how, what you think of X-Men 97 without that. And, you know, I'm wondering like how much of a crutch is going to be the nostalgia for those of us who really liked the original show, you know? And, but I mean, very excited about that. You know, we know it's got a second season and, you know, just, getting to see the pictures from last night, it made me realize it was unfortunate that my kids were under the weather, so I wasn't able to go. Also, I wasn't invited, so I wasn't able to go. But you know, either way,
they had your picture up in a lot of entrances, saying don't let them in. That would have hurt. But you know, when I was watching the original cartoon series, I realized like Gambit's never real. You know, The guy like from Friday Night Lights was fine as Gambit in that terrible X-Men, the terrible Wolverine movie. But
Taylor Kitsch. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously they didn't know what they were doing with him. Like he ran home to go get a stick, which I thought was the funniest part of the whole film. You know, it's like he leaves and he's like, where'd he go? And he comes back with a stick. It's like that guy can.
Well, that's how you solve every problem. Like, hang on, I'll be right back.
Go, wait right there. Remind me to murder you later. But like Gambit, their version of Rogue, as much as I loved Anna Paquin's take in the first X-Men movie, they didn't give her much beyond that one. And so there's all these great characters, and I realize there's a whole generation now of people who may, let's say, never read the comic book. They're going to be introduced to these characters correctly, is maybe how I'd put it. You know, the way Cyclops is used, if they continue that. So I think it will actually really potentially help, possibly even hurt the new X-Men, because it's going to give people a frame of reference that maybe a lot of audience doesn't have. So it's going to up the ante for them to get it right when they recast a lot of these roles over the next few years.
Yeah, no, I think that, I've said this before on this show and others, there's only one on-screen adaptation of Phoenix that's ever worked, and it's from X-Men the Animated Series.
Was that towards the end of the run, or was that?
It's like kind of in the middle. It's probably season three. It was my freshman year of college. Like I said, that's not just an anecdote to try and be funny. Like I had a VCR in college and I absolutely said it. So he's like, I am not missing these episodes, these Dark Phoenix ones. You know, I could miss some of the Saturday ones. And hey, look, it's our buddy Cowboys Fan 92. Great to see you in here. And I remember the show dropping live. Yeah, I think a lot of people do. And you know, one of the things that helped is my younger sister is 7 years younger than me. So that was a show that we could watch together and both enjoy. And she basically had to, you know, put on, you know, like hazmat gloves and a dust-free suit, but I would let her read my comics. You know, she was interested in reading the comics from that. And I'm like, all right, but you know, you break it, you bought it. But so it's I don't know. I think that there's excitement for this. We're about to get it. I'm glad that this is a show that we're going to be able to talk about. I'm glad that there's a show to talk about, because there's not a lot of other stuff, is there?
It's 7 years of feast, 7 years of famine. We're in the famine. This Deadpool, Kraven, that's it. Right. I mean, I don't think even Agatha's not coming out, I think, until next year. Or is that late this year?
I think it's late this year. You know, you didn't mention Madame Web. Have you forgotten already the fun time that we had at the theater?
I think that video should be. But again, this is the official prop for Madame Web, because it makes as much sense as Madame Web. I think you should share that video of us every episode of this show. And I could just cut in different things. So us with watching X-Men, but still the brotherhood of man that is us in Burbank seeing a 1 o'clock show on Valentine's Day.
I should do that, but you know, we'll see if we get there. Yeah, we'll share that video whenever possible. Key Files asked in the chat how many episodes. I believe it's 10. We talked about it in a past episode. And yeah, Daniel, Key Files wants to know how many episodes. Daniel Drew confirms. So we do want to touch on the fact that, you know, there's the positive news around the premiere of the show. And there is this is a Hollywood Reporter headline from two people, Boris Kitt and Aaron Couch, that they did fire the executive producer, Bo DeMeo, who worked on Moon Knight and Blade, and he's not going to be working on future seasons. He was doing the first two seasons, and he had done those past projects, apologies, but he'd been discussing ideas for the third season, but they parted ways. His company email was deactivated and cast and crew were informed he was no longer part of the project. His Instagram account, once a source for X-Men updates, was deleted. I've heard some theories about why his Instagram would be deleted, and I don't want to jump to any conclusions. It could just be like, you know, your Instagram is filled with stuff about the project you just got fired from. And you're like, well, I'm going to pull the plug on that because, you know, why am I working so hard? And Cowboys fan, you can say it's also weird. Yeah, but let's keep in mind that most of these Disney Plus live action shows have replaced showrunners some multiple times. You know, I know for a fact Hawkeye did that. I believe no, Echo didn't, but they basically scrapped, I don't know, like half a year's work on Daredevil, you know? So these things happen kind of a lot with Disney. I mean, when you think about their films, how many directors they've had and hired and gone into development with, and then they replace them with somebody else, you know? I mean, they, again, not this franchise, but they reshot, I don't know, 75% of Solo with Ron Howard, because they didn't like what the what Lord and Miller were doing. So, you know, they have a very specific expectation for what they do. And, you know, I guess they felt like, all right, the first season was good. Maybe they were disappointed with the way the second season turned out, and they thought it was just time to make a change. But I'm not here to theorize about any reasons why they might have done it. You know, all we can know is that there's the proverbial creative differences. They're moving on. If there's more to this story, we'll certainly talk about it. But, you know, for now, we can be excited about what I assume will be 20 episodes over these two seasons. You know, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, you know, there's definitely no shortage of instances of personnel change within Marvel and
Disney. It's happened a lot more recently, though. I mean, yeah, you know, even starting with like Doctor Strange too, where you know, the original guy was shown that, you know, creative differences. They bring in someone a little safer, Sam Raimi. You know, Blade has had so many directors come and go on that project, yeah, and writers. So I you're right that they have not had sort of a shortage of shuffling behind the scenes, but I think the past couple of years, it seems like it's a lot. So I think they're kind of in this, like, it's a little bit like a way station right now. They got to figure out, okay, well, Deadpool, that's probably gonna do well. So then it's like, all right, now what does that mean? Like, where do we put Deadpool next? Because if he's, you know, if this is now going to be like Deadpool is, I don't think he'll ever replace Iron Man, but at least he's the sure thing. How do we work this into other projects? And what's that mean for projects like Blade? Which, yeah, you know, I could see a Blade Deadpool team up would be amazing, but would it make any sense? I don't know. I think it's, you know, I it's good. Marvel, Disney put the brakes on some of these things. I think they needed the time to reassess and reconfigure. A lot of writers have gone through the Secret Wars, though, and the new Avengers, which is also concerning. So, but I know all it takes is one or two really great ones and they're back on track.
Yeah, no. I think that, that, you know, it's too bad that the tide didn't turn after Guardians, you know, that they didn't follow it up with another success. You know, because you definitely want to have that momentum, you know, and at some point, We will we'll focus more on, you know, where we're all going, but this is a time to be excited. We've got X-Men 97 and we will be covering it. So on March 20th, two episodes are going to drop, and you would think we would be there right away to cover those. And but again, my kids on spring break make it a little complicated. So we will cover the show in a timely fashion. We'll be very excited to talk about that. And we do, sometime in the near future, let's just say, we'll be doing an episode of this show where we talk about the efforts to get the 1994 Fantastic Four, the Roger Corman Fantastic Four, what I have said on this show and others, is the only good live action representation of the FF we've gotten. I think I usually say it's the best. That's actually what I say. It's the best of the four that we've gotten. And we'll be talking more, but we'll devote an entire show to that. There are efforts to get it finally released. I don't have it all lined up. I had hoped to be able to tell everyone what day it's going to be, but we'll be doing an episode of this show. I think actually it will be on Friday, the 29th of March. We'll focus directly on that. So but we'll be back before then with some wrap-ups on X-Men 97. Key Files with a great question. Do you have the episodes already? I did not make it onto that list. But honestly, I usually only get them a few days before, so I would probably get them over the weekend if I do. So I haven't seen them yet. But I know
he gets them early enough to tell me he has them. Yeah. And I don't.
Yeah. And then I just delete the email because I'm like, nah, I didn't want them. But we have a very brief programming note. So there will be an episode of us talking about X-Men 97. We will have to figure out exactly when we're going to do that. But I do want to let everybody know that our next Geekscape book club, we're going to be talking about something in DC. We're going to be talking about this 1986 Aquaman miniseries to tie into Aquaman 2, the movie that everybody loved when it was in the theaters, but, you know, love even more now that it's on Max for free. And I knew somebody who had, my buddy Will Sterling, had all four issues. And I was like, oh, can I just borrow those? Makes my life so much easier than having to get a trade paperback or a digital version or use a new email to have another free trial of DC Universe Infinite. You know, there's all the tricks of the trade that we can have here. But so I'm excited about that. And then that's going to be Thursday, March 28th at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Yeah, 2 p.m. Pacific. I was like, wait, did I do the math correctly? I'm like, I think I did. So in any case, follow us on social media. I'm at Christian DMZ. I will let you know when you'll be able to see us recapping X-Men 97. I'm sorry that I can't provide an exact date, but like I said, if you subscribe to the feed for the audio podcast, you'll get them right away. But we appreciate everybody who shows up in here. And Daniel's asking me, did you see my post-con photos tweet? Yeah, you had, Daniel, I'm sorry. I wanted to grab the photo of you with Alacqua Cox, AKA Echo. And it's just, there've been days this week where I've had both kids homesick. So we do our best. And the wind apparently blew away our friend Katie Hampton. So we hope she tumbleweeds back into to the show in time for our X-Men 97 episode. Eric, where can people find, can't believe you just put that in the message and no, I'm not going to say it.
I know. That's why I said it to you. You could find me.
Home run, Kumia.
You could find me and my windblown face in Burbank at Can Eric Connor over on Instagram at X. I'm looking forward to some new Marvel content that isn't Madam Web, which I just assume forget. But yeah. I never will.
No, we're tangled in her web forever, aren't we?
That's the web.
Yeah. But we appreciate everybody that was here in the live chat. Everybody contributed, good questions, comments, jokes. We love when everybody's here watching with us live. This is the slot we usually try to do, but what we're trying to figure out, I'll just let everybody know before we go, the show's going to be released on Wednesdays. But we don't know what time yet. So that's making it tough for us to figure out when to do the show. Like, is it going to be one of those deals where it's like Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Pacific because that's midnight on the East Coast? So when we know when we're going to be able to watch the show, it'll make it easier for us to plan. And, we do have to factor in Brody's on East Coast time. But that will be our next episode of this show. We've got Geekscape Book Club coming up at the end of the month. We're also going to talk about the Fantastic Four, the 1994 Roger Corman Fantastic Four. So we got a lot of great stuff coming up, Eric, don't we?
I mean, it's a good time to be alive. It's the best of time. Yeah. And it will compensate for what I'm sure will be another disappointing Met season for us. Oh. It's a season of life and happiness within the Marvel Movie Talk universe. Yeah. On Geekscape.
I know. That day that we do Geekscape Book Club, it'll have been Mets opening day 4 hours earlier. And I
still be coming down.
We'll be coming down from the high. And maybe I'll eat a chili dog during that show. Anyway. Oh, and Cammy Egan, I was talking about what book will be reviewed at the end of the month, but that is the reason why I took my virtual background.
Now
away
we
earlier.
See where he really is.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm in the dining room because I need to be able to listen for my daughter. But so it's this Aquaman miniseries from 1986. Which comes highly recommended. And I'm glad it came up again because I meant to mention that our friend Jeff Winstead will join us. He's been on Geekscape Book Club with us in the past. He's been on this show in the past too. But I'm excited to have him join us as we talk about it. He's the one who has been recommending that to a number of people. Look at this. At the last minute, Ivan Soto wanders in here. How hard R will Deadpool 3 be?
I don't
want it to be super hard R. Well, I understood that the working title was Deadpool DVDA. So I think that there's a very real chance it's going to be. No, I think it's going to be super violent with a lot of swearing. But, here's the thing, Ivan. Take a look at either of the first two Deadpools. And if you think that that's too hard of an R, then this probably will be. I'll tell you what it won't be. A harder R than either of the Fox movies. So I think it'll be dialed down a little bit, but I think it's still going to be pretty crazy because they know what made Deadpool work. And Ivan, we're glad to see you here. We appreciate you coming in. Unfortunately, we're about to wind down. You've never seen Deadpool. Check out the first one. If you like it, watch the second one. But the first Deadpool's great. Anyway, that's all the time we have for now. We'll see you guys very soon when we talk about X-Men 97. But that's all the time we have for now. We'll see you next time. As the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.